Then, in this city, out of which something new was always springing at him, Wang Lung saw another new thing he didn't understand. He saw one day, when he pulled his rickshaw empty down a street looking for a customer, a man seized as he stood by a small band of armed soldiers. And when the man protested, the soldiers brandished knives in his face. And while Wang Lung watched in amazement, another was seized, and another, and it came to Wang Lung that those who were seized were all common fellows who worked with their hands. And while he stared, yet another man was seized, and this one a man who lived in the hut nearest his own against the wall. Then Wang Lung perceived, suddenly out of his astonishment, that all these men seized were as ignorant as he as to why they were thus being taken, willy-nilly, whether they would or not. And Wang Lung thrust his rickshaw into a side alley, and he dropped it and darted into the door of a hot water shop, lest he be next. And there he hid, crouched low behind the great cauldrons until the soldiers passed. And then he asked the keeper of the hot water shop the meaning of the thing he had seen. And the man, who was old and shriveled with the steam rising continually about him out of the copper cauldrons of his trade, answered with indifference, "It is but another war somewhere. Who knows what all this fighting to and fro is about? But so it has been since I was a lad, and so will it be after I am dead, and well I know it." "Well, and but why do they seize my neighbor, who is as innocent as I, who have never heard of this new war?" asked Wang Lung in great consternation. And the old man clattered the lids of his cauldrons and answered, "These soldiers are going to battle somewhere, and they need carriers for their bedding and their guns and their ammunition, and so they force laborers like you to do it. But what part are you from? It is no new sight in this city." "But what then?" urged Wang Lung, breathless. "What wage, what return?" Now the old man was very old, and he had no great hope in anything, and no interest in anything beyond his cauldrons, and he answered carelessly, "Wage there is none, and but 2 bits of dry bread a day, and a sup from a pond, and you may go home when the destination is reached, if your 2 legs can carry you." "Well, but a man's family," said Wang Lung, aghast. "Well, and what do they know or care of that?" said the old man scornfully, peering under the wooden lid of the nearest cauldron to see if the water bubbled yet. A cloud of steam enveloped him, and his wrinkled face could scarcely be seen peering into the cauldron. Nevertheless, he was kindly, for when he came forth again out of the steam, he saw what Wang Lung could not see from where he crouched, that once more the soldiers approached, searching the streets from which now every able-bodied working man had fled. "Stoop yet more," he said to Wang Lung. "They are come again." And Wang Lung crouched low behind the cauldrons, and the soldiers clattered down the cobbles to the west. And when the sound of their leathern boots was gone, Wang Lung darted out, and seizing his rickshaw, he ran with it empty to the hut. Then to O Lan, who had but just returned from the roadside to cook a little of the green stuff she had gathered, he told in broken, panting words what was happening, and how nearly he had not escaped. And as he spoke, this new horror sprang up in him, the horror that he be dragged to battlefields. And not only his old father and his family left alone to starve, but he dying upon a battlefield, and his blood spilled out, and never more able to see his own land. He looked at O Lan haggardly, and he said, "Now am I truly tempted to sell the little slave and go north to the land." But she, after listening, mused, and said in her plain and unmoved way, "Wait a few days. There is strange talk about." Nevertheless, he went out no more in the daylight, but he sent the eldest lad to return the rickshaw to the place from where he hired it, and he waited until the night came. And he went to the houses of merchandise, and for half what he had earned before, he pulled all night the great wagon loads of boxes, to each wagon a dozen men pulling and straining and groaning. And the boxes were filled with silks, and with cottons, and with fragrant tobacco, so fragrant that the smell of it leaked through the wood. And there were great jars of oils and of wines. All night through the dark streets he strained against the ropes, his body naked and streaming with sweating, and his bare feet slipping on the cobbles, slimy and wet as they were with the dampness of the night. Before them, to show the way, ran a little lad carrying a flaming torch, and in the light of this torch the faces and the bodies of the men and the wet stones glistened alike. And Wang Lung came home before dawn, gasping, and too broken for food until he had slept. But during the bright day, when the soldiers searched the street, he slept safely in the furthermost corner of the hut behind a pile of straw Olan gathered to make a shield for him. What battles there were, or who fought which other one, Wang Lung didn't know. But with the further coming of spring, the city became filled with the unrest of fear. All during the days, carriages drawn by horses pulled rich men and their possessions of clothing and satin-covered bedding, and their beautiful women and their jewels, to the river's edge, where ships carried them away to other places. And some went to that other house where fire wagons came and went. Wang Lung never went upon the streets in the day, but his sons came back with their eyes wide and bright, crying, "We saw such an one and such an one, a man as fat and monstrous as a god in a temple, and his body covered with many feet of yellow silk, and on his thumb a great gold ring set with green stone like a piece of glass, and his flesh was all bright with oil and eating." Or the elder cried, "And we have seen such boxes and boxes, and when I asked what was in them, one said, 'There is gold and silver in them, but the rich cannot take all they have away, and some day it will all be ours.' Now what did he mean by this, my father?" And the lad opened his eyes inquisitively to his father. But when Wang Lung answered shortly, "How should I know what an idle city fellow means?" the lad cried wistfully, "Oh, I wish we might go even now and get it if it is ours. I should like to taste a cake. I have never tasted a sweet cake with sesame seeds sprinkled on the top." The old man looked up from his dreaming at this, and he said as one croons to himself, "When we had a good harvest, we had such cakes at the autumn feast. When the sesame had been threshed, and before it was sold, we kept a little back to make such cakes." And Wang Lung remembered the cakes that Olan had once made at the New Year's feast. Cakes of rice flour and lard and sugar. And his mouth watered and his heart pained him with longing for that which was past. "If we were only back on our land," he muttered. Then suddenly it seemed to him that not one more day could he lie in this wretched hut, which wasn't wide enough for him even to stretch his length in behind the pile of straw. Nor could he another night strain the hours through, his body bent against a rope cutting into his flesh, and dragging the load over the cobblestones. Each stone he had come to know now as a separate enemy, and he knew each rut by which he might evade a stone and so use an ounce less of his life. There were times in the black nights, especially when it rained and the streets were wet and more wet than usual, that the whole hatred of his heart went out against these stones under his feet, these stones that seemed to cling and to hang on to the wheels of his inhuman load. "Ah, the fair land," he cried out suddenly, and fell to weeping, so that the children were frightened, and the old man, looking at his son in consternation, twisted his face this way and that under his sparse beard, as a child's face twists when he sees his mother weep. And again it was Olan who said in her flat, plain voice, "Yet a little while, and we shall see a thing. There is talk everywhere now."
This ends Disc 4.